Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. The Museum of Healthcare is entering a new chapter, announcing it will now be known as the Canadian Museum of Healthcare, a name change that reflects the museum's growth and an expanding vision for its future. Located in the Ann Bailey Building on the Kingston General Hospital site, the museum explores the history of healthcare from the 18th century to the modern era. While rooted in Kingston, its exhibits already tell stories from across the country, highlighting key developments in national medical history. Anna Collette, Programming and Communications Coordinator with the Canadian Museum of Healthcare, spoke to the decision to change the name.
This has been a long time coming because our collection is actually quite national. We have over 35,000 artifacts in our collection, and it's the largest collection of medical artifacts in Canada. So we thought it was a great time to, with the new year, to start aligning ourselves with our collection and our actual outreach.
Colette says visitors shouldn't expect a dramatic shift in the museum's direction. The gallery already features artifacts and stories from across Canada, tracing the progress of healthcare nationally, also making the new name a more accurate reflection of what the museum already offers. Colette shared some of the museum's current offerings.
So with our national collection, we can certainly reach within our own collection as well. One example I can think of is a pair of dentures that was made by a man in British Columbia, and he didn't want to pay for his dentures, so he actually went and shot a deer and filed down the teeth to make a pair of deer teeth dentures. That's another interesting artifact we have that's from British Columbia. One exhibit we have focuses on vaccination and immunization, so it takes quite a large scope because it looks at cases of different diseases like polio, diphtheria, and smallpox, and how that has changed since vaccination programs have been introduced. So it takes quite a large scope, and we have an artifact called the Iron Lung, which was built in Toronto, and it's quite the star artifact at the museum. It was used for children who had polio who couldn't breathe on their own. It's from the 1930s before vaccination was introduced, so it really shows a time before vaccines.
Looking ahead, the Canadian Museum of Healthcare will continue the work it has always done, all while embracing new opportunities to tell an even broader range of stories from Canada's healthcare past.
So we're hoping it brings a bit more attention to healthcare history and also our role in Kingston and reaching even further to national scope. So starting in Kingston, we've always been deeply rooted in Kingston, but hoping to branch out a little bit. The Canadian Museum of Healthcare is open Wednesday to Friday, 10 to 4 during the winter. And starting in June, we're open every day from 10 to 4. And students with their IDs, admission is $5.
At their last meeting, Council passed an advocacy-based motion about measles vaccination awareness. This motion comes after the Pan American Health Organization notified the Public Health Agency of Canada that Canada has lost its measles elimination status due to sustained transmission over more than 1 year. According to Ontario Public Health, between 2013 and 2023, Ontario reported a total of 101 measles cases. In 2025 alone, there were 2,395 reported cases in the province. Local data from Southeast Public Health indicates higher vaccination rates in the KFLNA region, with an overall regional measles immunization coverage of 90.7% among the school-age population. However, the motion was brought forward with the concern of overall declining vaccination rates, vaccine misinformation, and the disruption of routine immunizations during the COVID-19 pandemic. Specifically, the motion asks that Council affirm the safety and effectiveness of the vaccine, encourage residents to verify their vaccination status with their healthcare provider or Southeast Public Health, and urge the public to rely on credible health information and avoid sources that promote vaccine misinformation. Councillor Jeff McLaren brought the motion before Council, seconded by Councillor Connie Glenn.
It came to my attention through Public Health that Canada lost our measles elimination late last year. Around November is when I heard about it. And then we talked about why this was happening. A lot of it might be some of the misinformation that's coming from south of the border and all of that. But it is a little bit embarrassing that we, a first world country with a first class healthcare system, lost this designation. It's been the first time we've done it in almost 30 years. 20 to 30 years was the last time that we had lost this. And this is dangerous. It is critically important for the health of our country and our community to get to make sure you've been vaccinated. It is a lifelong immunity. But if you haven't been vaccinated, you will be transmitting this. And if you thought COVID was bad and we don't have herd immunity, it's going to be worse for those who get it. The most mild symptoms are life-threatening.
One of the reasons for talking about this, although we have a high vaccination rate here in KFNLA, is the concept of herd immunity means that that we're also protecting those who cannot be vaccinated. There are individuals that are allergic to vaccinations, small children who have yet to receive one are at high risk. So putting this out there is really to remind us as a community that we have a duty of care to one another. And I think it was quite shocking to a number of individuals in the healthcare community to see us lose that elimination status. Again, this is one of the most communicable diseases on the planet. We can't continue to be complacent. We need to make sure that we continue to re-message, to make sure that everyone is understanding the importance of continuing to keep up to date with vaccinations, measles and others. But right now, I'd like to see Canada regain its elimination status in short order. And we can do that if we continue to message out on as many channels as possible.
The motion was carried with a vote of 12 to 1, with the sole opposing vote coming from Councillor Gary Osterhoff. Messaging about the measles vaccine will be posted through the city's communication channels in coordination with Southeast Public Health's public information efforts. Council has unanimously approved a motion calling for a comprehensive review of accessible transportation options across the city. The motion, brought forward by Councillor Brandon Tozzo, directs city staff to examine how existing accessible transit services are working and identify ways to improve and simplify access for residents who rely on them. The city currently subsidizes Kingston Access Bus to provide accessible transportation alongside conventional Kingston Transit services. In 2025, the city also introduced an accessible taxi program through the Kingston and Area Taxi Licensing Commission, designed to enhance service options available to riders. Since then, additional private accessible transportation services have become available. The city is also exploring the implementation of an on-demand transit service in rural areas, which would include an accessible fleet, as early as late 2026. The approved motion calls for staff to complete a board review of all accessible transportation options, including existing subsidies, with the goal of maximizing access for residents and streamlining how people navigate available services. Councillor Tozzo stated the following before council before the vote.
Today, Kingston has multiple accessible transportation options, Kingston Access Bus, Kingston Transit, and the Accessible Taxi Program, which was introduced in 2025. Private accessible providers and soon potentially on-demand transit services in rural areas. Each of these services exists because we as a council care about accessibility. At its core, accessible transportation is the difference between independence and isolation, between being able to participate in community life or being left behind by systems that are simply too hard to navigate. When the ATP program was introduced in 2025, there were hopes that this option would fill another gap. This program has been used and it's made a real difference for residents who need the more flexible schedule than bus services can provide. I think its update demonstrates demand, but it also highlights the need for clearer rules, better integration with other services, better eligibility, and a thoughtful approach to how the city coordinates and manages accessible transportation going forward. There are many options for accessibility, but eligibility rules are often unclear. Booking processes are inconsistent. I think that we've all heard from constituents about that. Coverage and affordability vary depending on which phone number you call. And for somebody already living with mobility challenges, cognitive barriers, illness, or age-related changes, that complexity can be overwhelming. And services that exist in silos really don't help anyone. Accessibility should reduce barriers, not create new ones. This motion asks us to step back and look at the whole picture, not to point fingers, not to predetermine outcomes, but to ask whether our current approach currently serves the people it was designated for. Are we making it easier for residents to understand their options? Are subsidies being used in ways to maximize real access? Are new services being integrated in a way that simplifies the experience, or are we unintentionally layering confusion on top of confusion? As we plan for future transit innovations, we have an opportunity to build accessibility from the start, rather than retrofitting it later. That opportunity only works if we understand what's working, what isn't, and where people are falling through the cracks. Ultimately, this motion is about the city we want to be, a city where accessible transportation is understandable, coordinated, and dignified, a city where independence is supported, not eroded by confusing procedures, a city where inclusion is reflected not just in our values, but in how people experience daily life, and a city that is a leader in accessibility and inclusion where everyone belongs.
City staff are expected to report back to council with preliminary options for expanded accessible transportation services by the fourth quarter of 2026. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. This is your Campus Beat here on CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm Henry with your newest Queen's News. Queen's Center for International and Defense Policy has announced the creation of a newly restructured advisory council aimed at strengthening the center's engagement with national and international policy discussions. The council brings together experts from defense, government, academia, and research institutions to provide strategic guidance on the center's priorities and public outreach. According to the center, the council's role will include advising on research direction, helping connect academic work to real-world policy challenges, and expanding the center's influence beyond the university. The launch comes as global security and defense issues continue to evolve rapidly, and as Queen's marks a significant milestone year for the center. University officials say the council reflects a broader effort to ensure research conducted at Queen's remains relevant to contemporary policy debates. Queen's University was the site of a recent provincial announcement confirming a $242 million investment in post-secondary infrastructures across Ontario. The funding is intended to modernize learning spaces, update equipment, and provide improved training environments at colleges and universities throughout the province. At Queen's, part of the funding will support expanded medical simulation and training facilities, including advanced mannequins and immersive learning tools used in healthcare education. These resources are designed to reflect a wider range of real-world clinical scenarios, allowing students to develop skills in controlled but realistic environments. University representatives emphasize the infrastructure investments of this kind are increasingly important as enrollment grows and teaching methods evolve. Provincial officials frame the funding as a way to ensure graduates are prepared for in-demand careers, particularly in healthcare and applied fields. Ontario universities are raising concerns about recent federal and provincial study permit policies that are expected to reduce the number of international students this year. In their joint statement to provincial lawmakers, sector leaders, including the Council of Ontario Universities, COU, noted that international student enrollment at Queen's for 2025-2026 school year reached 3,199 students from 123 countries. The COU warned that recent caps on provincial attestation letters required for international student study permits have been reduced by nearly one-third. Officials say this has already cut university revenue by hundreds of millions of dollars and could continue to strain the budgets, research capacity, and program offerings unless policy changes occur. Queen's emphasized that international students play a vital role not only in academic life, but also in the Kingston community's cultural and economic fabric. As outlined in a recent release from PSAC Local 901, graduate teaching students and assistants at Queen's have publicly described growing concerns about workload and compensation. According to union representatives, many TAs feel the amount of work expected of them has increased as class sizes grow and administrative tasks expand, even though budget allocations for TA hours have not increased. One TA and PhD candidate, Zhuanjin Qiai, explained that while wages rose following a previous collective agreement, the effective number of funded hours decreased, leading to tighter workloads for many graduate students. Faculty representatives have stated that TA allocations are adjusted in response to enrollment and course needs, but union leaders argue that available hours have not kept pace with rising demands. In athletic news, the Queen's University Football Hall of Fame recently welcomed a new inductee, Cam Innes. A standout former Gael player was honored for his contributions on the field and his embodiment of leadership and team spirit during his time with Queen's football team. Innes described the induction as a very special moment in his athletic career and a meaningful recognition of his efforts at Queen's University's Richardson Stadium. This has been your Queen's Campus Beat, Queen's Campus News here at Queen's University. I've been Henry. You've been listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. Thank you for listening.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Monday, January 26th, 75% chance of snow in the forecast. Looks like we'll get the remainder of that Sunday snowstorm, predicted to be 3 to 6 centimeters of snow in total, and still bitterly cold. Daytime high of minus 12, feeling closer to minus 20 with the wind chill. Tuesday, January 27th, just a tiny bit more snow in the forecast, 65% chance of a centimeter or two of additional snow coming on the 27th, daytime high of minus 10, overnight low of minus 21. Wednesday, January 28th, daytime high of minus 10, but it will be sunny, albeit quite cold. Thursday, January 29th, bitterly cold here in the city of Kingston, daytime high of minus 14. We'll actually feel a little closer to minus 12 in the sun, but we do have the possibility of some isolated flurries in the afternoon. Friday, January 30th, daytime high of minus 11, feeling closer to minus 20. More snow in the forecast, not a ton of accumulation, but we will have snow falling on the 30th of January. Saturday, January 31st, daytime high of minus 10, feeling closer to minus 12, otherwise it is sunny. And we get our first single-digit negative temperature day coming up on Sunday, February 1st. Daytime high of minus 7, only going to feel like minus 9. Practically balmy compared to everything that came before it. And then Monday, February 2nd, daytime high of minus 5, overnight low of minus 11, with a little bit of snow forecasted for the afternoon. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, winter parking restrictions are in effect for January and February, which bans any on-street overnight parking in the City of Kingston. The rules will lax on March 1st, when overnight street parking will only be banned when the weather permits it. Here are some road closures for this week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Market Street, King to Ontario is closed beginning on January 26th at 7 a.m. to February 20th at 11 p.m. for the Spirit of Winter event. And in terms of other delays, just the one to report, Front Road Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage.
Could the universe itself be conscious? Hey, hey, what's up, everyone? It's Gigi, CFRC's newest intern, and you're listening to What's Live at 5 on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up on this segment, I've got K-Town's hottest concert and event calendars for the week, starting with events. On Monday, January 26th, we've got karaoke at the Time Out Bar at 6 p.m. Bring a friend or don't. Trivia at the Brass Pub at 7:45 p.m. and Q-Wave is offering an audio production masterclass with Dr. Matt Rogalski, who is a composer, sound artist, and musicologist. Join him, Q-Wave members, and students for a one-hour masterclass on sonic production in Queen's University Building, Matt Corey, Room B201 at 6:30 p.m. And if you're loving Q-Wave, you're in luck. Moving on to Tuesday, January 27th, join Q-Wave for another audio production masterclass with Afternoon Bike Ride, an eclectic indie trio in Jeffrey Hall, room 110, and via Zoom at 1 o'clock p.m. If singing is more your thing, no worries, I got you. Join Fiercely OK Song Circles, No Experience Required, at 99 York Street at 6:30 p.m. Or if you're feeling competitive, head to Daft Brewing to play some euchre. Arrive as a team of two at 7 p.m. for a chance to win a $50 Daft Brewing gift card. But if after that you've still got some competitive energy left, on Wednesday, January 28th, swing by Something in the Water Brewing Company for board games from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. On Thursday, January 29th, strengthen, stretch, and sweat at all levels yoga, Thrive 365, at the Athletics and Recreation Center, or the ARC as we call it, in Studio 4 from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock p.m., suitable for all participant levels. The Kingston Grand Theater is hosting the beautiful Swan Lake in the Rosen Auditorium at 7 o'clock p.m. And if you'd like to meet like-minded individuals, roll on to Splitsville from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. for a premium after-hours business networking event in a relaxed and informal atmosphere. If you're looking for weekend plans, I'm your girl. On Friday, January 30th, the Kingston Frontenacs are looking to win their 7th consecutive home game. The Fronts play the Sudbury Wolves at Slush Puppy Place at 7:05 p.m. Bring your friends and let them know, go Fronts go! The Grand Shanghai Circus will also be performing at the Kingston Grand Theater in the Rosen Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. And of course, bring a date or bring your situationship and head to Friday Night Karaoke at the Buckle at 9 o'clock p.m. Definitely don't forget your cowboy shoes. On Saturday, January 31st, I have the perfect excuse to dress up a little. Head to the Queen's Football Awards night at the Kingston Grand Theater in the Rosen Auditorium at 6:30 p.m. And last but certainly not the least, on Sunday, February 1st, swing by Memorial Center Farmers Market at the Kingston Memorial Center grounds from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. for fresh foods and to show your support to local vendors. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. No matter what you're into this week, music, food, dancing, or just pretending you have your life together, I've got you covered. For more details on all these events, check out cfrc.ca or lock in right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. You're listening to Gigi on CFRC Radio, and from us to you, have the best week ever, be safe, be kind, and I'll catch you next week. If we could live forever, would life become meaningless? Hey, hey, it's still Gigi, CFRC's newest intern, and you're listening to What's Live at 5 on CFRC 101.9 FM. Continuing with our concert calendar for the week, starting with Monday, January 26th, if you're feeling some jazz and whiskey, head out and support the Morning Doves at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar from 8 to 11 p.m. If you're loving the Musiki vibes and feeling a little bold, I got you covered. Tuesday, January 27th, Musiki Cafe is hosting an open mic night from 8 to 11 p.m. On Wednesday, January 28th, we have quite the busy night at Hotel Wolf Island. Catch DJ Great White playing from 4 to 7 p.m. Hollowbody will also be playing at the Hotel Wolf Island from 6:30 to 7:30, followed by the Hotel Sessions open mic night from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. For my Country Roads folks, Tyler Brett Forks hits the stage at the Bank Gastro Bar at 5:30 until 7:30 p.m. Wrapping up the night, Nolan Hubbard takes the stage at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Thursday, January 29th, kick the night off at the Creekside Bar and Grill with Donnie Cooper at 6 p.m. until 8. At 7 p.m., don't miss Simply the Best, a Voices Rock Medicine Winter Showcase happening at the Spire. And for those of you eager for the weekend, Quinlan Shearer will be live at the Toucan from 9:30 p.m. until 1 a.m. And of course, my favorite time of the week, on Friday, January 30th, kick off the evening at the Toucan for some live musical entertainment by Christopher Jackson from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. If sports is more your thing, head to KNR Sports Bar to watch the Toronto Raptors, accompanied by music from the Trevor Walsh Band starting at 8 p.m. To finish off your night, make sure to warm up those vocal cords first and head to karaoke at the Buckle from 9 to 11:30 p.m. Continuing the weekend strong, on Saturday, January 31st, we're starting off early at 4 p.m. Catch Purple Diamonds live at Timeout Bar and Bistro until 6:30 p.m. at 6 p.m., head to the Cove Inn for the Westport Senior Living Fundraiser featuring Henry Norwood and Sean McCullough, running until 10 p.m. The Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts is hosting Rights Reclaimed from 7 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. And if you're heading out for a late night date night, Sweet Pea and the Heat hit the stage at the Toucan from 10:30 p.m. until 2 a.m. To wrap up your week of music on Sunday, February 1st, starting in the afternoon at 2 p.m., Mindy and Dennis Pacheco will be live at the Creekside Bar and Grill until 4 p.m. Also at 2 o'clock, Sunday Sessions with Tom Savage and Friends runs until 5 o'clock at the Kingston Yacht Club. And later in the night, enjoy Scott Owen at the Brass Pub performing some country tunes at 10 p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. No matter what you're into this week, music, food, dancing, or just pretending you have your life together, I've got you covered. For more details on all these events, check out cfrc.ca or lock in right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. You're listening to GG on CFRC Radio, and from me to you, have the best week ever, be safe, be kind, and I'll catch you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.